This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Earlier today on the Mac and Bone Show.
Let's go to someone that's right way more than twice in a week. She is an intrepid reporter covering your Carolina Panthers. I know so many Panther fans are following her and getting great info on Twitter. She is Sheena Quick, and she joins us now to talk about this Panthers offseason. Sheena, what's going on? How you been?
Hey, guys. I've been good. How have you been?
We're doing good.
I was great, Sheena, until I got caught in a situation where I got to admit Mac was right about something, and now I don't know what to do.
Oh, man, I hate that for you.
You know what it is? It's like when I have to admit, and I have to all the time, that my wife's right. And it pains me, Sheena, but it's 100% of the time. Dang it.
Yeah, you're pretty much my wife, Mac, at this point.
So I know how you feel. Now, Sheena, I feel like you're kind of right about something, and I want you to talk about this. You sent out a tweet the other day I really liked, because I know you're hearing a lot of the same stuff from Panther fans about Brian Burns that I'm hearing. And listen, if you want to make the case, like, respectfully, right, where we are, right. Bone was talking about earlier, where we are is a franchise. The most important thing is to get Bryce help, and we need draft picks to do that. So we need to trade Burns. That's a respectful argument. That's logical. But some of the slander of Brian Burns, I just feel like has gone too far. And it seems like you might feel that way about social media too, because I saw one of your tweets. What are you thinking about the way fans have acted towards Burns?
I feel like they acted towards Burns the way half of the fan base acted towards Christian McCaffrey before he got traded. And he went to another team and balled out, as we knew that he would, once he had some help and was utilized correctly and was able to, you know, not shoulder 95% of the offense. And to be fair, the fan base is just tired of losing. And I get it. So a quick eye test will say, hey, Brian Burns, our biggest asset other than Derrick Brown, let's trade him and get some picks. But you're essentially trading a proven player for a lottery ticket. They have the number 33 pick right now. They've not fared so well in the second rounds of these drafts lately. And I know it's a whole new front office, and I know Bryce needs help. This is not a one-year fix. It's not a one-year fix. I mean, the dominoes started falling when they got rid of Cam Newton all those years ago and didn't have a backup plan, and they've been kind of playing catch-up ever since and just exacerbating the issue ever since. You have Terrace Marshall Jr., who was taken in the second round. He's likely going to be on another team. Jeremy Chinn, he's likely going to be on another team. So you're willing to gamble away your edge and then have to find two edges. Yeah. You have to find two edge rushers. And this, I don't think people understand the market for an edge and how that, along with left tackle, is just as premium of a position as quarterback is. I don't think they're understanding that. And I don't want them to watch him ball out on another team next year while the picks that they got in exchange are struggling.
No, that's a great point.
We're talking to Sheena Quick. She's on Twitter at Sheena_Marie3. Willing to take a step down today, Mac, and talk to us instead of her appearances with Pat McAfee that we see all the
true.
Time.
That is true.
She's willing to come talk to the common folks today. Sheena, one more question on Burns and the Panthers. How surprised are you that this stuff and this negotiations and all the contract stuff has gone on for this long when it doesn't seem to us like they're really all that far apart?
Well, you got to think about all the turnover, too, because we were told back when Matt Rhule was still the coach that signing Brian Burns to an extension or a long-term deal was a priority. Since then, he's had, three defensive coordinators. They changed his position to outside linebacker. They've changed defensive schemes. Scott Fitterer is out. Dan Morgan and Dave Canales are pretty much playing catch-up. So I'm not surprised that right this second, that they haven't hammered anything down just because these guys are kind of still. I know Dan Morgan was in the room last year, but we don't know to what extent his voice was actually utilized or heard or, you know, taken into account. So the new regime is kind of playing catch up. I mean, they were just hired at the end of January, so they've been on the job like a month and a half. So they're trying to catch up to where these negotiations were last year. In the season before that, and the season before that. So I think that I don't know if this tag is just to buy a little bit of time. Hopefully it's to buy a little bit of time while they hammer out a new deal for him. They placed the non-exclusive tag on him. We saw that happen with Lamar Jackson. It's going to be very difficult for another team to come in, pay him what he wants to make and have to give the Panthers two first-round picks. Yeah. So them placing that type of tag on him certainly changes things in the Panthers' favor, in the organization's favor, that is. But I'm shocked that this didn't get done when they turned down those two first-rounders, because once you did that, you showed the valuation of him and the deal should have been done, like point-blank period. But since it was not, I'm not shocked that this new regime wants a little bit more time, just because they're just kind of getting their feet wet.
Definitely, definitely. That's well said. We're talking with Sheena Quick, covers the Panthers. And I know if you're a Panthers fan on Twitter, you know Sheena. There's no doubt about it. Sheena, as far as the pursuit of weapons for Bryce, and I'm kind of with you, I'd kind of like to do that separately rather than sacrificing Brian to do it, right? I'd like to try to find a way to accomplish both. What do you think are the best avenues? Let's say wide receiver. What are the names? Is it free agent? Is it draft? Is it both? What's the way that you think would be a good way to attack that wide receiver need?
I think it's a mixture of both. And luckily for the Panthers, this is a very, very deep wide receiver draft. There's going to be some good receivers in those second, third, and fourth rounds that can still be serviceable. I like Keon Coleman. You know, as a Seminole, I'm a little bit biased, but I like Keon Coleman. I like McConkey. I'm saying his name wrong, I'm sure. But I like him out of Georgia. Great separation. There's a number of ways, but I do like the idea of bringing in a veteran as well. So I think a mixture of free agency and the draft are what's going to be, you know, the key factors. And I feel like that's how this staff is approaching it. That's how the front office is approaching it. Now, the free agents they brought in last year, we thought were going to be boom, quick fixes. DJ Chark is a downfield threat. Adam Thielen, I stand by it. I do not think Adam Thielen came here to be wide receiver one. I don't think he expected to have to do all of that. But he became the most, you know, the most reliable receiver. And so, of course, with a rookie quarterback, you're going to go to it's kind of your safety net, so to speak. So he had a great season. But a lot of those free agent signings did not work out. Adam Thielen was the only one that worked out last year, and Von Bell. So you're a little bit leery to that. I wonder what we really need to be wondering is what's up with the scouting department? Like who's been retained? What were they thinking last year with these free agent signings? What are they thinking this year? What's going to be different? Unfortunately, we don't get to talk to them a lot. We got to talk to the head of scouting right before the draft last year. So we don't know how that draft board is falling, but I would love to kind of pick their brains and figure out, you know, what was up with these signings last year and how is that going to change this year?
Yeah.
Are they going to be more stingy? Like you just never know.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, because all these teams that play deep into the postseason, they're all built second, third, fourth rounds. They have depth. They find stars.
You have to hit on those rounds. Yes. Like you have to, and that's why I'm like, you know, everyone's saying trade for picks, but I mean, they haven't been that great in the draft department after the first round. So you're really taking a gamble there.
Sheena, how active do you think they should be with Calvin Ridley? And I bring him up specifically because Higgins and Evans, and we'll see about Pittman and all these wideouts that we've talked about, are probably already off the board or just won't be there. Is Ridley going to get too high of a price, or do you think that Ridley's a real good option for the Panthers?
I think Ridley is a good option because he does have experience, but he is still young. So you don't have an aging wide receiver or anything like that. So I think Ridley is a good target for them also, because everyone talks about the salary cap. That thing's a myth. The Saints are over that mug every single year and somehow magically are able to, you know, get what they need to do. Yeah. And that's where I'm looking at Brent Tillis. You're supposed to be the magician. Come in here and work your magic, make these numbers work, and get some talent on the offensive side of the ball.
Preach. I love that. Now I know why Pat McAfee put Sheena on for the national audience. Now I know why. Somebody said Sheena likes going on radio shows where hosts scream at her. I think I got to tell you, Sheena, I might even be quiet compared to McAfee, you know?
I love Pat. He's hilarious.
He seems like great people.
I kind of play the AJ Hawk role when Mac is talking. I just stare sometimes straight at
him. Listen. Sometimes I'm like, is your phone freeze? Yeah, that's They're awesome. Those guys are awesome.
They are, man.
I love the Carolina Panthers.
There you go. There's Pat. All right, last thing I want to ask about, and this is off the field, but we did a discussion on it last hour, and I know you're all over Panthers Twitter, so I know you know what the fans are saying. Yesterday, Nicole Tepper answered a question to Kay Adams live at Bank of America Stadium about, how have you embraced Charlotte? And she said, I think the way we've embraced it so far is we've brought more events to the stadium. She's talking about soccer, concerts, college football, everything, right? The event total is up immensely. And Panthers Twitter, not everybody, but a lot of y'all out there got awful salty. Here they go bringing up the concerts again. How do you feel about the way they reacted yesterday, way Panther fans, some of them reacted to that yesterday? I get why we're on edge. But I thought that I didn't think we needed that answer needed to make us that angry.
I think that it's a myriad of things. Like you said, Panthers fans are already on edge. Then we had that 13-minute presser after Frank Wright got fired, where 10 minutes of that was an answer to the Charlotte Business Journal, who was appropriately sat in the front row and asked a question that had absolutely nothing to do with football, despite the fact that he had just fired his second head coach in as many years. Those things kind of add up. It's like, but we're 2-15! If Panthers Twitter could scream, that's what they would say. We're 2-15! You're the owner of the Panthers! You bought the Panthers! You bought an NFL team! I get what Nicole is saying, because in the grand scheme of things, it is good for the economy and good for the Charlotte economy and the business sector and things like that. But you're in Bank of America Stadium talking to FanDuel about football. And so I think that it's great that, I think her mistake, honestly, not that she talked about the event total, because that is, that's admirable. I think is when she said that her favorite part or the most enjoyable part was the event, as opposed to.
And she's proudest of.
That she's proudest of.
The only thing is. You're bringing up
the owner of a football team, and your proudest moment is some concerts. Then,
the only thing, though, as a Panther fan, I hate to have to admit this, but it's like, I got to be honest. I don't know if there's been a football moment she should be more proud of than some of these.
They won two games late last year. They won two games in the fourth quarter. Yeah.
Right. So I get it. I get it. There hasn't been much to be proud of on the field, but you have a fan base that's already on edge. Like, they are TTG, they are trained to go, and they are frustrated. We drank the Kool-Aid last year, myself included. I put some extra sugar in there. This is the all-star staff, and I had to go pull out the clown nose, because 2-15 with the fanfare, and you traded up to one, and then you have this awesome, video montage building up, and we have a blueprint, and we have a plan, and I'm like, No.
Mac and I, we were not just drinking the Kool-Aid. We were doing keg stands the last summer.
I am not ashamed to admit that I drank the Kool-Aid. Did I think this team would be a double-digit win team? Not just yet, but I thought that they could contend for the division because it was so bad. And, nine wins would have won the division. I did not think they were 2-15 bad. I did not.
I was. I'm going to be guarded this year, Sheena. I'm going to set the bar lower this year. At least I'm going to try to. At least I'm going to try to stay calmer.
Have to be cautiously optimistic.
How about this? If we are wrong, if we are way off again, we'll all wear clown noses together. That'll be the thing. Yeah.
There you go.
Might as well. I have a cute one. I'm like, okay, I'm going to wear my hair in pigtails, because if I have to wear the clown nose, I'm going to slay it. I'm going to really own the look. Okay?
You could pull it off. I don't think Bone and I can look cute in clown noses, but you can pull it off. All right, Sheena, we appreciate you joining us and talking Panthers. Keep up all the good work. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wesson Walker Show.
I have stirred up the hive on the
the FanDuel text line. This is the Wes and Walker Show Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Man, I saved that. Elliot Cadeau, I feel like it's going to leave school. And boy, you guys came out of the woodwork, but you've been lit all day, and we love it. We always appreciate it. And listen, folks, I am not saying that he is a great NBA prospect. I think he should stay in school for multiple seasons. That's not what I'm saying here. I'm just saying the nature of the beast, high-profile player, high-profile school, whether he feels like he's looking at mock drafts and seeing himself or not, that, in my opinion, just conjecture, not saying that I think that he will look at that and he won't care about it. He will think that he could make it and maybe try his hand at the league.
I'm surprised. Like, that's the thing, because the point I was making, it shifted very quickly because you were saying Cadeau's not coming back so soon. And so I was making the point of North Carolina is going to be just fine, and they're going to be more than fine. They're still going to be great in how they operate at all levels of acquiring talent. But I was even still saying they're going to do the North Carolina thing. They get some recruits that are highly touted. A lot of them might not be five stars, but they're going to stay there for a while before they leave. Just the Cadeau stuff, even with him being a high profile prospect coming in, I mean, his stock has plummeted so much. I think you would have to bank on Cadeau and what you know about his personality. And I guess I know a little bit about his personality. Everybody seems to like him. He seems like a really cool kid. I haven't seen anything as to, oh, this was always going to be the case. I'm going to go to North Carolina for a year. Because this is the thing. If you leave now, then you are always going to do that. If you have this poor of a prospect year, this poor of a shooting season, and you leave now, then that means we knew right then and there at the beginning of the season there was nothing that could happen that was going to keep him at college. And I don't think we heard anything about it. And instead, I actually think we've heard about him enjoying his time there, from what I understand. So I would be very surprised to see Cadeau leave. And that's why I was surprised to see that you were so confident the opposite way, like that you expect him to go. And so I think that's what people are writing on the text line.
Yeah, I think, you know, with a lot of kids now, man, it's just a different type of kid. And like I said, obviously, I do not know. I'm just projecting what I think. I don't know his family. I don't know the people around him and what I think. But I mean, we see it all the time, from NFL to NBA, all of these sports. We see kids that we think should stay in school, should do this or do that, but they feel like that they can go anyway and test their luck and make it, man. And so, yeah, so that's all it is. Walker, what you got going on?
Well, we asked earlier some of the best raffles you've ever won and what was your first cell phone. Like, it was just a hodgepodge of random questions, because we'll do that sometimes. It's disorienting, but that's why we love it so much. And then we ask you to text in some of those answers on the text line. We have Panthers Evan writing in, "My first phone was a Motorola Razr." We already mentioned that one. Copeland Jokeland says, "I had one of the very first tablets. It was a stone tablet." Love it. Great joke. Thick Doink goes with a Nokia brick, same as Justin from Charlotte. "My first phone was the Nokia brick. It made calls and it had the game Snake on it. It was sick. Loved Snake. Got to be very good at it." And then, you know, we started to get into the high-tech phones. We have some other people writing in about the soda competitions. Shaggy says, "I won one of the Coke shirts from the 20-ounce bottles. They put a rolled-up shirt and four quarters to get an actual drink in the 20-ounce Coke bottles and vending machines. It was pretty wild back in the day." I like that as a back-in-the-day type of story. We're still scrolling. People are going with the Nokia Cricket. Fresh Dookie, who got mad at me because I don't say anything bad about Carolina. He says, "My brother's first phone was the Motorola Razr, and his ringtone was 'Buy You a Drink' by T-Pain." Which is classic. Yeah, even Fitty likes that one. Yes, he likes that one.
You want me to add that to the playlist, Fitty?
Yeah, you go right ahead.
It's great. It's a good one.
Those lyrics don't offend me.
Yeah, I hope not. T-Pain, man. Once you put auto-tune behind something, it can only be so hard. Okay, so
T-Pain can get a little vulgar, though. That's right up his alley.
It is, yeah. But it softens it up a little bit. It serves as some kind of sanitizing.
Yeah.
So, anyways, those are what people are telling us that they won in previous contests.
All right, just to clean up, to finish up the Campus Corner, though, quickly, South Carolina, they lost to Tennessee yesterday, but Walker, your Charlotte 49ers got back on the winning side of things. They beat Rice 69-64. Money Milicic, I like that name. They put that out there on social media last night. 26 points, 10 boards, got the double-double. Wanted to gauge your confidence in the 49ers in the AAC tournament.
It's not great, but it's I'm glad that they stopped the bleeding winning this game against Rice. You know, Rice, they're not a terrible basketball team. You know, they aren't like Tulane, but they still are towards the bottom of the conference. And they're there with a group of other bad or poor teams in the conference with Wichita State, 5-12, Texas, San Antonio, Temple, Tulane. But yeah, it's still one that you should have taken care of. And they did. But after a three-game skid, their offense still bogs down. DeSean Jackson, I don't think, is getting enough shots. I really like his game. And, you know, I still have some questions. So you're asking my confidence level. It's not phenomenal. It's not what it used to be when they were on this long winning streak. And then it felt like that second half against South Florida. That's when things started to change a little bit. And they got the win. But even still, they're not playing as well as they were.
What's earlier. The number one thing you think that they got to do to be able to win that AAC title?
Well, they have to defend because that's their identity still. Gotcha. Ron Sanchez era. So if you hold the opponent to, I don't know, the 60s, then you're going to have a shot every single time. But if they get to 70, that feels like the backbreaker against the Charlotte team. That's what it feels like watching them play. And so it's also they've got like okay 3-point shooters, but they don't have any knockdown guy outside of Milicic, who's 37. That's pretty good, right? We'll take that. It's above average. But Lukai shoots a decent amount, under 35%. You have Braswell, who was the gunner back in the day, under 35%. That's why it feels like if they don't defend, then it's going to be really hard to get up there in the 70s and win.
All right. So teased before the break, talking about Luke Kuechly getting back to the Carolina Panthers, NFL draft on the horizon, workouts, all those things. And we know that in the past, I mean, the Panthers have listened to former players before, or most recently a former player in Steve Smith when he gave the endorsement for Jonathan Mingo. And voila, he was here in town as a part of the Carolina Panthers. And so Luke Kuechly talked about a prospect yesterday that he loves a lot that has been compared to him, and it's Peyton Wilson out of NC State, who absolutely ripped the combine up, but he also has the tape to match that, as he was one of the nation's best linebackers as the Nagurski Award winner and a winner of the Butkus Award. So let's hear from Luke Kuechly on why he loves Peyton Wilson.
At the draft, you know, I always look at linebackers, and there's a guy that I loved watching for a long time up at NC State, Peyton Wilson.
Okay.
He ran extremely well. He was in the 4.4s, and he's been super productive, and he plays really hard.
I feel like he gets comps to you, which is like crazy. Look at this.
There we go.
They did this on NFL Network. I hate player comps, by the way.
He's taller than me, and he's faster than me, and he's going to be in the NFL. So I'm jealous of those guys. All these guys that are coming out, you talk to them and they're like, what would you change? What would you do differently? I said, I'm just so jealous of you guys. And I had so much fun playing football. Look at him run right there. He's got great hair. He's jacked.
Let's just for one, man, let's just give a, you know, some flowers to Luke Kuechly for being such a modest, humble player. It's hard to find players as humble as that guy is, because listen, man, he ain't got nothing in the world to be jealous of any of these guys coming out of college. 532 tackles, 35 and a half tackles for loss, and 7 interceptions during his time in college. Stop it. He's one of the NCAA's all-time leading tackles. I mean, this guy, the least amount of tackles he had in 3 years was 158, leading up to 191 tackled, 12 tackled for loss senior season. My Lord.
My question is, why is Luke Kuechly saying that Peyton Wilson has this great head of hair like he doesn't? Is he going bald? It's not like he has a bad hairline, is it? Like, I'm looking up pictures right now, I guess, from his playing days, but I don't know if his hairline is going terribly.
So let's live in a world to where the Panthers do listen to the advice of Luke Kuechly, and it makes them take a harder look at Peyton Wilson, and they end up drafting him, which a lot of people feel like could be kind of sort. I use the term very loosely, a luxury position for the Panthers, because it's not a huge position of need, especially if they are able to re-sign Frankie Louvu, and we're going to talk about that in a minute, and also keeping Brian Burns. But would that be a luxury position the Panthers draft, especially if they got a guy like Peyton Wilson, that you'd be okay with that?
Yeah, I would absolutely be okay with drafting somebody like Peyton Wilson, because one, Peyton Wilson playing alongside Frankie Louvu, I think having that athleticism, having a complete linebacker, I go back to what Mina Kimes was talking about with Mike Renner when they were mentioning maybe drafting older linebackers is the way to go. If you're going to especially take care of that position in the second or third round, that makes a lot of sense to me, where usually you're trying to get the younger guys at almost every position, linebacker makes more sense because of how nuanced the position is, how physically gifted you have to be with everything that is asked of that position. Now, not only do you have to be smart, but you have to be fast, you have to cover, you have to blitz, you have to tackle in the run game. And Peyton Wilson does all of that with a crazy athlete, who is a crazy athlete, who is really smart. And if you can get that guy, even if he's a little older, in the third round, like the only reason he falls in the third round is because of injury concerns. But I think he tested out or pretty well.
I'm not mistaken. So sure that drop is going to happen. I don't think he's really going to lower it in second round at this point.
Totally agree with that.
Yeah.
I think he's too good. There's nothing he's missing except for the clean bill of health. Mm-hmm. Other than that, then point to the weakness in his game.
Yeah.
Because I don't think you can. So, yeah, it would be tough, especially if, okay, the best players defensively on this team, Wes, it's if you keep them, Brian Burns, Derek Brown, it's Frankie Louvu, but almost it specializes in these not unique skill sets, but a little bit rarer skill sets, right? With the linebacker being so good at rushing the passer, not very good in coverage, you know, still making a beeline towards the ball. Having Louvu and Wilson, like, I think those guys complement each other so well. And then I'm cool with the safeties on the back end, not to mention J.C. Horn staying healthy. Yeah, I could absolutely, I've already done it, talk myself into Peyton Wilson being a good pick. At 33, I just can't do it. We need help offensively too bad. I just can't do it. But it would be fun as hell to have him on the defense.
Well, you know, from a guy who, if you're talking about it, if they're able to re-sign Louvu and have Brian Burns and add a Peyton Wilson, that would be pretty sick. But I want to ask a guy whose team that Peyton Wilson has absolutely wrecked the last couple of years. So you know him very well, Fitty. Would you be good with them being able to do that?
Yeah, because he's a hell of a football player. And I think in the long run, he's gonna make them a better team. And look, it's once players leave college, my feelings they lessen. So I don't care because I want the Panthers to be good.
If they this is somebody you really dislike.
Yes, dude. Well, he was at NC State. This was a guy that was coming to Carolina, and then Larry Fedora'd him to not come to Carolina. He goes to NC State. And effectively kicked our ass for 4 years and really owned Drake May and his two starts against them. But once their time in college is done, I don't care. I want the Panthers good. If he makes the Panthers better, I will endorse them drafting Peyton Wilson.
Now, would he be in play even more for you, Walker? Because I know you said at that 33rd pick, that's a bit rich for you now. Let's just say a scenario, Burns ends up somewhere else and Frankie Louvu ends up somewhere else. Would he then be a guy that you could be more than comfortable with being drafted at 33?
It would help, but not to the point where I would pass up an offensive weapon.
So for you, is it offense no matter what? Because yeah, if it's VPA, like on their board, he's their best player. You want them to draft an offensive player no matter what?
100%. I want a wide receiver or I want offensive line help. You drafted Bryce Young first overall last year, and you had two wins after terrible coaching and terrible talent that you put around him. Everything this football team does needs to be making sure that Bryce Young has success. If you use your top pick on Peyton Wilson and instead of drafting a wide receiver, instead of drafting somebody that actually helps Bryce Young in the pocket, I can't sign off on it. Even if I absolutely recognize Peyton Wilson is you just heard me praise him to no end and say, yeah, that would be a great luxury pick to have. He's a luxury at 33. If he falls to the 60s because of some medical scare, cool. That's fine. But you can't, to me, take a defensive player when you have such a strong wide receiver class that, like, guys that usually would be going, what, 15th?
Yeah, the strong receiver and strong O-line class.
End up being at 33?
Yeah.
You got to take advantage of it, especially because everything surrounds Bryce Young and making sure that pick works. Now, you got to hit on the white receiver, unless you want to get Ladd McConkey, and then maybe you can hit on that guy. But you need to hit on the right receiver for sure, but you're going to have your options to do so. Nothing against Peyton Wilson. I am operating from a level of making sure Bryce Young has everything he needs in order to be successful.
No doubt, Walker, and that's great thinking. And, I mean, you can't really go wrong with that. I mean, you got to be able to supplement your rookie quarterback. And so I wanted to ask the FanDuel text line as well that, you know, if you did lose Louvu or Burns, one or the other, how do you guys like your players to be traded or to leave? Do you want to see them go to a different conference? Do you want to see them in the same division so that you can play against them and, I guess, show them what they missed? Like, how do you like it? Because I know for me personally, if I trade one of the better players or I lose one of the better players on my team, I want to see them go to another conference, especially. And I guess it depends on the position. I mean, some you don't care more than others, but I think guys that have real impacts on the game, like if you lost Brian Burns, would you prefer to see him go to the AFC to a team like the Ravens, or would you want to see him go to like the Falcons so you could put it to him every year? Like, Walker, what's your level of pettiness when one of your favorite players on the team leaves?
Well, it all depends too. It's like for me, because of the PJ Washington stuff, I want PJ to play well because I thought he was a better player than given credit for. And so, yeah, I would like for him to play well at Dallas. But with Brian Burns, I think that's also going to be polarizing with people who don't think he played well. They want to be proven right. Or you have the Panthers loyal fans that just want everybody to be successful. Brian Burns is going to be polarizing, right? Like, so for me, I'm cool. I think Carolina is at fault for a lot of this. Mm-hmm. And so if Burns has success, I'm going to be cheering him on wherever he goes, because I think he's that type of talent.
Yeah, he is. He goes to the New Orleans Saints. Well, I was going to have him right in that top three, baby.
I guess that's true. I don't want him going to the division. I don't want him going to the Saints. That's true. That's fair. I admit that. But if he goes somewhere else, I don't care in conference, because it's the likelihood is you'll play him in the regular season. You might play him in the postseason, but the division, you see that man every year, twice a year. No, thank you. I don't know the last player I saw leave that I wanted to fail so badly.
Mm.
I'm really trying to think of it, and I can't think of anybody here recently with the Hornets or the Panthers. So I pull for them fine enough, or if they go to a division rival, then yeah, I'll pull against them then, but sometimes I'm just not that petty, man. Sometimes I'm just not. I'm sorry. I know it's boring.
You got to fan better, man.
I'm sorry.
Steve on the FanDuel text line says, don't draft for needs. Draft best available. Look at DJ draft last year. Shade Tree said, everybody said the same thing when we drafted Keekly, talking about Peyton Wilson. And 919 number says, imagine how bad this take will be if he turns into a Hall of Famer. Comparing him to Luke is crazy.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked, because Instant Replay continues next, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
And it got, I heard Mac and Bone discussing it this morning. John Shire versus Hubert Davis, who's coaching better right now? Which of the two coaches that took over for legends has done a better job to this point in their tenure? And I don't think there's a real answer to it, but we can debate it. In fact, let's welcome in Luke DeCock, Raleigh News and Observer, longtime sports columnist, good friend of the show. He's back with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. I imagine you're kind of like me, that you probably don't think there's a real answer to this, but Shire versus Davis, you know it's a topic. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think there's an answer, in part because, you know, for all that both of them have accomplished, you know, Hubert missed the tournament last year, and John Shire is 1-1 in the NCAA tournament with a team that should have gone farther than it did. So it's kind of, I think they both get an incomplete. That said, I think the transition to from legends to internal hires, not necessarily guys who are on the top of everybody's list. There's not a Jay Wright or a Brad Stevens or a Billy Donovan, you know, coming in and riding the, you know, like the Lone Ranger's horse coming in to save the day. They went with guys inside the program, former players, stayed inside the family / brotherhood. And both guys have continued the excellence of both programs. You know, Duke obviously has recruited like crazy. Hubert Davis did a great job taking what worked from last year, discarding what didn't, and putting together a team that certainly is Final Four capable and has already won a share of the ACC regular season title. So I think while it's an incomplete grade, you know, there's a continuity there that's probably a lot harder to achieve than most people would give those guys credit for. So I think there's definitely far more pluses on that side of the ledger than there are minuses. But I think they both have something to prove. Hubert Davis has to prove that last year was not an aberration, and even his first season, you know, was not going swimmingly in February. This year obviously has gone much better. And there's no question that he started, you know, he didn't play a lot of guys the last 2 years. He's played a lot more guys this year. he clearly has a roster that's more guys who are on his wavelength. And when you look at Duke, you know, John Shire, there's been no drop-off in recruiting from the latter years of Mike Krzyzewski. They've just continued to pull in top 25 prospects, one-and-done guys, and tried to find guys to fill in around them. So I think, you know, there's a lot to like about what both guys have done. And obviously, you know, Hubert Davis has that Final Four run. But I think it's really still too soon to say definitively one way or the other which guy's done better. That Duke and North Carolina, that's judged by national titles. That's the standard. So until one of those guys wins one, I think it's going to remain an open debate.
All right, so Carolina Duke round two, the finale of the regular season on Saturday. Carolina's won 5 straight since losing to Syracuse. Duke's won 9 straight since losing to Carolina, and they're 19-3 since I think the middle of December. Who's playing better going into this game?
I still think Carolina is. I mean, it's just a really powerful team, but there's also no question that Duke has hit its stride. Is a much better team than it was a month or two ago. You know, and some of that is Tyrese Proctor rounding into form. Mark Mitchell's continued to emerge. Lately, Sean Stewart's become an important piece for them. I don't think anyone, you know, saw that coming six, eight weeks ago. So it makes for a good matchup. And you know, it's crazy to think this is the first time since 2012 that this game is going to decide the ACC title between these two teams. And they haven't shared the title since 2001. So, you know, this is an interesting time. The stakes are very high, and there's motivation out there. Duke, I think, still remembers Armando Bacot saying that the ACC title goes through him. Well, you know, in this game, he's got a chance to prove it. He actually said today that he probably could have chosen his words better. And John Shire said this morning that he hasn't forgotten that game because he didn't like the way Duke played. He feels like they still have something to prove. So I think the stage is set for a really good sort of finale to the regular season. That said, these two teams have been so far and away the head of the class in the ACC this season. I will be not shocked, but surprised if they're not playing again a week from Saturday.
Luke DeCock, Raleigh News and Observer. He's with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. So Wake Forest, let's go there for a second. You know, after they beat Duke, it felt like they were a lock for the tournament. They've lost 3 straight since then. And how would you describe what we're watching right now? This collapse, it's one thing to lose a game or two, but this is something else. How would you characterize what we're watching from Wake right now?
What we're watching is what we've seen with Iowa in the NCAA tournament every year. When you're a team that's all offense and no defense, there's nothing you can fall back on when your offense goes awry. And that killed all those Iowa teams that could put up points like crazy, incredible offenses. They never played any defense. And Wake, look, you as a coach, you can kind of pick one or the other, right? Very few teams have the talent and the time and the staff to be good on both offense and defense. You're all going to hang your hat on one thing or the other. And Steve Forbes runs some amazing offense. He's got some great offensive players. When they added Efton Reed in the middle of the season, that did help their defense in the middle, obviously. But, you know, if things start to slip, you know, you don't have a lot to fall back on. You're not going to fall back on your defense and win games 54-50. And I think that's a little bit of what we've seen with Wake. This is really the most incredible Seth Greenberg tribute act, beating Duke and then playing your way out of the NCAA tournament. All we're missing, missing is the right word because we desperately miss Dick Vitale. It's amazing, and I know people, you know, get on him or maybe a little tired of the act. It's entirely genuine, and all we're missing, and I wish he were doing games again. I hope he's back next year. I hope everything works out for him with his throat issues. But all we're missing is him telling Steve Forbes they can't keep you out of the NCAA tournament now. Put your dancing shoes on, Steve, because this is ACC history repeats itself, and it's repeating itself with Wake Forest the same way it did with that Virginia Tech team.
Okay. Now, last thing on this, and I want to move on for the time being, but, you know, you and I talked about potential state head coaches if they move on from Kevin Keats next week, but there really seems to be this week a real split opinion on what Boo Corrigan and the university will do. Do you have any sense of what state's going to do, and how much is that contingent upon the way they finish the season?
I mean, this is my opinion. This is, you know, semi-informed based on conversations with people, based on knowing the people involved, based on knowing Kevin Keats' contract, based on knowing that the university feels like Kevin Keats has done a pretty good job, the fade at the end of the season aside. I don't think Boo Corrigan wants to go through a coaching search. I don't think Chancellor Randy Woodson, who's got 1 foot out the door before he leaves next summer, in the summer of 2025, wants to go through a coaching search, and he's been very involved in athletics, for better or for worse. And I don't think they want, at a time when they're trying to scrape together every nickel for NIL, to find a way to pay Kevin Keith's buyout. I just think the circumstances are such that he's going to get another year because of the personalities involved, because of the financial dynamics, because of the dynamics at the school. There are still very important boosters who like Kevin Keith. That matters. And I think they're going to see what he does next year and then make a decision. Fans may not be happy with that. There certainly has been a degree of apathy. But I'll tell you, the first half of that Duke game on whatever day it was, it feels like a month ago on Monday, that building was loud. It was full. It was engaged. It's still out there when NC State is playing well and has a chance to win. So I don't believe anything is going to happen. Obviously, if NC State were to make a move, you can make that case equally well. That in 2024, that's the cost of doing business. You need to pay the buyout and move on. He's had plenty of time. There isn't any traction. Still hasn't won an NCAA tournament game. Still hasn't made a run in the ACC tournament. All of that is true. And if you wanted to make a move, you could cite all of that and no one would argue with you. I just don't think it's in the cards right now based on all of the various dynamics at NC State.
Oh, real quick, I bet you'd have a take on this. I'm curious to hear what you think. Caitlin Clark, women's college basketball, obviously another banner year for them. And we saw the Michael Mulvihill tweet from 2 days ago that average viewership on Fox for women's college basketball regular season games, it slightly surpassed that of men's college basketball games. And, of course, everybody's running with narratives and thoughts and takes and reasons why. I thought Dan Patrick framed it very well earlier this week when he asked the question, is women's college basketball having a moment or a movement? How would you characterize it?
You know, it's an interesting question. I don't think it's a moment. I mean, I think this is the product of a groundswell of growth in that game that goes back several years. And I think, for me, the watershed moment is less Caitlin Clark than it was that the debacle in San Antonio at the 21 NCAA tournament, yeah, where the NCAA had to acknowledge that it was treating the women differently. Well, look, over the last 3 years, where they've been forced to invest in the women's game and treat the women's game the same way they treat the men's game because they got their hand slapped for being idiots about it, the women's game has thrived and flourished. It helps that it has a Steph Curry-like personality that everybody wants to see. It helps that it has some heels in wrestling parlance because everybody's rooting against LSU. But in the end, I think this is really not a spike in interest in women's basketball. This is the logical conclusion of a long ascent. And honestly, I think you're going to see it in volleyball, maybe not to the same degree. And I think you may see it in softball. Again, not to the same degree. But the participation numbers in those sports are so big, and people care about it, and they make for great television, which, as we know, is the only thing that matters in college athletics these days. I think you're going to continue to see this. I don't think there's any going back from this. You know, I think the question is, you know, how much of a ceiling is there on this?
All right, Luke Dukak, Raleigh News and Observer. He's with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Real quick take from you on the Panthers. Brian Burns is now under the franchise tag. Josina Anderson with another report about an hour ago about possible draft compensation, trade compensation. It's not a great outlook. And, boy, this is a messy, tangled situation. Luke, what do you think of where they are right now? Because it's not a good spot for either side to really be in.
No, it's not, but this happens. I mean, there's a reason that the franchise tag is in there. These things tend to get sorted out, look, one way or the other. To me, it makes sense for the Panthers eventually to figure out what it's going to take to get this done and make Brian Burns a Panther for the long term. I go back to a couple of years ago with Taylor Moten. There's a certain point where you just got to bite the bullet and say, we're better off with this guy. Let's get it done. Now, Brian Burns wants out, completely different story. You got to do the best you can, and, you know, you end up in a McCaffrey-type situation. But, you know, the franchise tag tends to act as a sort of catalyst. It's kind of like a laxative for constipated deals. I don't know whether that happens right away or down the road, but there typically is a process in these situations where both sides eventually come to the realization they're better off together than separate.
All right, last thing, NHL trade deadline tomorrow. I did see that the Hurricanes activated Frederik Andersen from injured reserve earlier today, but, you know, just to listen to a lot of Canes fans, they're either hoping or even anticipating the Canes do something significant before tomorrow's deadline. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of angst that we've had two very active days leading up to the the deadline, and the Hurricanes haven't done anything. And they haven't made major moves the last couple years, and certainly last year it came back to haunt them a little bit. It did in 2021 as well. They did. If you're reading the tea leaves, and obviously I hear things and I'm interested to follow, you could read my column online about why this is the year that the Hurricanes should go against their typical procedure and make a big move. And you know, the name that I mentioned is Jake Guentzel, who's been hurt for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but is the big goal-scoring winger out there at a very high price that they haven't typically wanted to pay for a guy who's going to be a free agent in the summer. They put three guys on waivers today. Doesn't mean those guys are leaving. It's, you know, Antti Raanta, the third string goalie, and Tony DeAngelo and Brendan Lemieux, depth forward and defenseman. They just cleared a ton of cap space. They're going to have, and the numbers are hazy, but they're going to be able to add an $8 to $9 million contract tonight or tomorrow if they want to. They have the cap flexibility to make a massive move. Now, putting those guys on waivers doesn't guarantee that they have something cooking, but it opens the door for that. And so they've put themselves in a position where if they want to, and if they think they can do it right, they can make a big move. If they don't, people are going to be really pissed off. There's no question about that. But that's also not their style, and that style has brought them a lot of success. And it's kept this team out of cap jail. It's kept this team with a full cupboard of assets and prospects. But the point is, at a certain point, when you're a contender and you've been moving into this position for 5 years, there is a point where you need to put your chips in the middle of the table and say, now is the time. And I think for the Hurricanes, that's this year.
Love it. By the way, Hurricanes hosting the Canadiens tonight, 7 o'clock at PNC. Luke, enjoy it, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, Cal.
You've tuned into Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.